This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and our special guest today is Carrie Pierce. Carrie is the branch manager and senior loan manager for Flagstar Bank. With over 25 years in the lending business, I've known Carrie for just about as long as he's been in the business. Carrie, welcome to our show.
Thank you very much for having me.
That was kind of a wild guess on the 25 years. How long has it been?
It's actually been 35.
35 years. Well, I didn't think you were that old. You don't look that old.
Yeah, I started when I was 15.
Okay. That's funny. We have somebody in the office, Robin, who worked for her father at 14 in the lend business. So, you know, she was actually able to say stuff like that. Yeah, I've got 10 years experience, and she looked like 24 years old. You go, are you kidding me? What I want to do, I think, is I want to go back to just touch on 2000, say, to 2006 or whenever the craziness ended. Talk about the lending policies and kind of the transition they went through. Who were you working for in those years?
From 01 to 06, it ended up as Home 123, which was a division of New Century. And New Century was one of the top three subprime lenders in the nation.
Okay.
So we felt it first before, I think, anyone else. What happened was it was early 07 when everything hit the fan, and I think it was somewhere around March that they took $4 billion to Wall Street, because that's how much we did per month in total volume with the subprime and a paper, and Wall Street said, we're not buying it. And then another month went by, and there's $8 billion sitting there, and Wall Street wouldn't buy it, and the company went out of business overnight.
And that took a two-month period.
Yeah, they were structured as a REIT. So as a REIT, you know, they don't retain a lot of capital. They pay out 90%, I think, is how most REITs are structured. So they didn't have the capital to weather that storm.
I'm going to go backwards a little bit before that day. What happened to that $8 billion of paper? I'm just curious.
I'm sure it ended up getting discounted and sold off, probably a massive haircut, probably 50 cents on the dollar or something like that.
Wow. That's a lot of money when you're talking billions of dollars. Okay.
Massive losses, yeah.
So this was not a conservative lender you were working for at that time. So what were some of the lending programs, kind of like when they came up, you looked at them and shook your head and go, oh, wow, that's really aggressive.
The best example I can give you is my neighbor across the street came to me to refinance two of his rentals in San Bernardino. And we were able to do a 90% non-owner cash out stated income.
Okay.
So I think he ended up losing both of those properties.
Well, he probably didn't care. He had all the cash out already.
Yeah, at that point. Well, he parlayed it into other properties in Utah, I think.
Okay.
And I think he even ended up losing those.
Yeah, there was the mindset at that point was just get as many as you can.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. And he actually got aggressive and started buying units. And one of the properties he picked up in Utah was like a 20 or 30 unit property. And I think he picked it up for $1 million, but he leveraged those two rentals in San Bernardino to get the down for it. And he did it with like 10% down, which was amazing. So very aggressive financing back then.
What were we're going to get in today's market, but what was back then? What was the credit score expectation, or did it matter? And did the debt ratios matter?
No, credit scores did matter somewhat. I mean, still stated income, I don't remember exactly. I would have to guess somewhere around 660, 680 in that range. But they were on a full doc, I think, would go all the way down to the mid 500s or 580-ish.
Okay. When you guys created paper, take me through the process that you exit it. First of all, how do you fund it? So you're talking about doing $4 billion of loans in a month. You're initially funding that through what, a credit line?
Yeah, warehouse line.
Okay. So that was in-house, and then you brought it to Wall Street. And at the time, prior to the day that you're talking about in 07, what was the appetite of whatever you were able to write?
Oh, it was bring all you can. You know, I mean, that's why they just, Wall Street was crazy for it. And our company pooled it. You know, they would sell it in pools of, you know, say 10 million, 20 million, somewhere in that range, maybe more. And they would sell it, and Wall Street would securitize it, and then they would sell it off. And we all know what happened after that.
Yeah. You know, I hear we hear the word overlays, as in, okay, here's the loan program that exists, but we're going to be more conservative. Did you guys have any overlays, or that was sort of out the window at the time?
Back then, no. Today, yeah.
Okay. What were some of those programs that were actually safe enough to have today? Let's say if you had to choose one or two of those programs that seem pretty aggressive, but you think, you know what, that actually would be safe if we would re-implement that.
Honestly, I thought the 80-20 was a great program as long as it was full doc, you know, where you manage their debt ratio with provable income. You know, it's similar to FHA, actually better because there was no mortgage insurance.
Correct.
So as long as it was full doc, I think it was a great program.
Yeah, and I'm sure that a lot of those probably failed only because the whole market sunk 50%. But if it was a standalone in a normal market, it probably would have had a really good success ratio. So when you're saying full doc,
yeah. Similar to VA.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I was just going to say that.
VA has one of the best performance ratings out there on a zero down loan.
Yeah, they vet it well, and then of course I guess they have to have some type of reserves, and it's, I wish we could get back to something like that. Remember the loan program I talked about where the loan could move forward to another buyer, or the foreclosure process would only be the back payments. I think you could raise ownership a lot if you had the chance to implement that.
For sure. When the first 80-20 first came out, it was all subprime, so it was mainly targeted to the lower FICO people. But Fannie Mae even came out with their own, you know, it was, you know, a rent standard A paper fixed rate first and a fixed rate 15 or 30 year second, and, you know, quality rates. But it was obviously full doc. It wasn't stated. But obviously when the market crashed, all those programs died on the vine.
When Fannie Freddie went into government receivership, how did that change the game funding loans through them?
Obviously, they started enacting the loan level price adjustments for all kinds of scenarios. It used to be if you had a 740 plus FICO and you were putting 20% or more down, you actually got a slight improvement to the rate. Well, when all the chaos happened, they enacted all these loan level price adjustments, and now there's add. So a 740 borrower that puts 20% down actually has a half a point hit to the pricing.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You had mentioned something that I thought was interesting when you're talking about Fannie Mae, and there was something you thought could happen within a year that would be kind of a game changer. So could you expand on that a little bit? Do you remember what you
were? I'm not clear on.
There was something about Fannie Mae's program might change, that their ratios that were going to be acceptable were maybe going to change, and I don't know what the time frame was on that.
Yeah, that's happening January next year. January next year, they have to abide by the QM rule, and QM says you can't be over 43% on your debt ratio.
Okay.
So they've had a window, and it's obviously got one more year before it expires, but the gist is we're hearing that they're not going to get renewed and that all Fannie Freddie loans are going to have to comply with a 43 max debt ratio.
And what impact do you think that'll have on the loan business, and is that going to impact the purchase side more than the refi side?
What our people tell us is that that's about 25% of the business.
Oh.
So that's a big piece of the market that's going to go away.
Wow. Okay. To be replaced by?
Unless they come out with, you know, better programs or something, but right now Fannie and Freddie are talking about finally coming out of conservatorship, and things could get tighter over there. So we don't know that they're going to be gunslinging like they used to with all the crazy programs.
Yeah, I would say that's probably they're going to be kind of under watchful eye for a while, probably.
Yeah.
Okay. Right now, you know, we had a little break in interest rates. What was the ratio? What is the ratio right now of refis to purchase loans?
Right now, I'd say we're probably 70% purchase, 30% refi.
Okay. And when interest rates were approaching, you know, 4.75%, something like that, what was the ratio then?
We were probably 90 purchase, 10 refi.
Okay. And the 90 purchase, so there was just a reduction in overall business then. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, when rates got down to 3.5, you know, the refi ratio was 50%.
Right.
But as it rises, obviously it keeps dwindling. And, you know, we had a bout there for a while when rates got up to 5, and that's when refi levels dropped to about 10%.
When people refi, are they typically getting cash out?
Today, we're seeing more of that. More people are pulling cash out than doing the rate term, because most of the people that got their loans, you know, within the last 5 years probably are between 3.5 and 4.25. So most of those don't really make sense on a rate term refi. So when they need the cash out to pay off other debt, then it can make sense.
Okay. What about credit lines behind a first? Are you connected to that line of lending at all?
Yeah, we do HELOCs here, and they go up to 90% of combined value. So first, for your value minus the first, and then up to 90% is how much you can bridge the gap with a HELOC.
And how aggressive are people being with that?
We're seeing quite a bit, actually. We didn't do them at our previous company, but here we do, and it's definitely been a helpful tool.
Okay. What about a HELOC on a rental?
No, unfortunately, primary residence and second home only.
We got to have a meeting with your guys, man. Now, why would, you know, I'm just curious, do they, first of all, they do lend to investors under Fannie Freddie guidelines anyway for investors?
Yes, and even on jumbo.
Okay. But the credit line is just not a product that they currently have. Is that something they think about? And how would you implement something new to a lender?
I doubt that our bank, as conservative as they are, I don't think they would ever go to a non-owner HELOC. They just are too gun-shy, I think.
That's interesting. You know, one of the things that we had the privilege of doing was going back and presenting in front of Fannie Mae in Washington, D.C. We'd done it 3 times. And the first time was kind of close to the, you know, the cycle where it was really bad. So we got invited back by the chief economist of Fannie Mae. And when I presented, I brought our performance of our loan portfolio, basically, because at that point, you can imagine what they thought of investors, you know, as far as risk tolerance. And we had a loan portfolio that was basically 99% current at 10% interest, to exactly the people they thought was terrible to lend to.
Wow.
And so that was the message I was trying to get across to them, is that, you know, you're talking about you're afraid of speculators. Great idea. But an investor is a different person. So
yeah, I know. I don't understand why the industry views the investor as such a risky proposition, but
you're not going to change it overnight, but that's, but a lender that you're working for now, like Flagstar Bank, do they have, is it their option to do that, or is there restriction they can't do it?
I mean, they have the ability to do portfolio products, and we have several that are very, very good. You know, they have a doctor program, they have a professional program for like CPAs, lawyers, certain people in the medical field, obviously doctors, where they do a zero down up to 850, which is a very aggressive product.
Zero down, sorry, to 850,000?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Are there any risky loan programs in the marketplace that you see as potential problem going forward?
Not really today. I mean, everything's pulled off, so everybody coming in's got to qualify. At least everything we do. There are some lenders out there with the subprime starting to come back, like bank statement programs, that kind of thing. But we don't, I mean, we have access to them, but we don't, most of our guys don't do it.
Okay. And is that still a very minor part of the marketplace as opposed to the standard loans?
Yes. Okay. Probably 1-2% is that.
Okay. What was it, going backwards, when you were talking about, you know, presenting $4 billion of paper a month from where you worked, what was the ratio of subprime as far as a piece of the market at that point?
Oh, wow. I would say at New Century, subprime was 75% of the overall volume and 25% retail.
Okay. But as like...
Which was the A paper division.
Okay. But as far as the overall A paper world, was subprime, what percentage of it, of the market do you think it was?
Of all loans, probably at least 50%.
Wow. Okay. Well, no wonder it became such a problem.
The sad thing is a lot of people with good credit got stuck in those subprime loans without realizing it. People were just very aggressive on the phone, and you know, they sold them on the program and they didn't really know what they were doing.
Yeah. The ratio right now of fixed rate to adjustable, great percentage of people fixed?
I would say our percentage is at least 90% fixed rate.
Okay.
We do very few ARMs.
Okay. I'm surprised it's even that high if it's 10%.
Yeah, the ARM business comes into play for like the portfolio program because it is an ARM. It's not a fixed.
Okay.
So when you have somebody that's a little outside the box, but you know, they still have to document everything, but they, you know, for instance, if they have a lot of assets, they'll help use that as extra income to help qualify, different things like that. That's where they kind of try to think a little bit outside the box to help the people qualify. But still, the ARM percentage is very low.
And what if somebody's self-employed? How are they looked at by the lending world?
Self-employed is tough because most people that are self-employed write off a good chunk of their income, and we have to do a two-year average of their net after expenses.
Right.
So it makes it difficult.
Okay.
Can I ask this question really quick?
Sure.
On, hey, Carrie, it's Aaron. Accessory dwelling units, are you seeing requests for that pickup? Know of any programs?
A little bit, but we haven't really designed any new products for it. But the you know, agency is okay with it, so we definitely have been able to get those loans done.
On an existing property, are you doing sort of like a HELOC if they've got an existing in place? Like, how do you structure that?
Well, typically, I mean, most of the stuff we do is purchased. So, you know, people are coming in with however much down. Fannie Mae, you can go as little as 3% down up to whatever. But, you know, so it just depends on the client.
So if they're doing a purchase, are you having any issues with the appraisal coming in on those?
The key there is that there's got to be like comps. There's got to be at least one, hopefully two or three, that are similar properties that have the same accessory unit in that same market.
Yep. So for those,
so if you have one in a market that doesn't have the comps, it will be a challenge.
Okay. Real estate investors, start collecting those comps.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. Got to have some evidence there. Is the biggest fear of somebody like Flagstar, first of all, do they portfolio a great deal of what they fund?
They subservice almost everything. So they do end up selling the loan off, but then they subservice it.
Okay.
So You know, that way they're not tying up mass amounts of capital.
Right.
But we do service a very large portfolio. I think it's getting close to $200 billion.
When you fund a loan, is there another group of people that look at the documentation after the fact, so the loan's closed? Is there some process where there's somebody looking at what was done and seeing if there was anything done that they don't like?
Oh, yeah. Quality control exists, and I don't know what the percentage is. I doubt that it's as high as 10%, but I think that's kind of a general rule, is to try to, you know, audit at least 10% of the loans. But we do get some things that come back. Our previous company, where that happened most to us was on jumbo product, because we would sell to the big banks like Chase and Wells. And if they didn't like something, even after they bought the loan, they would come back to you and say, "You got to fix this."
You got to fix it?
Yeah. We had a couple situations where they said, "We flat out refused to buy the loan, and we want you to take it back."
Okay. Well, that's not fixing it. I mean, that's just, we don't want what we said we wanted.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
But a lot of times they would give us the opportunity to fix it, and we would.
Oh.
But there were a few where just couldn't, and we ended up having to take the loan back or refi it.
Okay. And when you take it back, what is the big issue there? Is that like a ding on your scorecard, or is it just financially inconvenient and not something that you want to do?
They don't want to do it because they have to put it in the portfolio.
Right.
And that's just tying up capital.
Okay. How long does the risk last for the originator?
How long does the risk?
Yeah, in other words, could you get somebody calling you up 3 or 4 years from now saying, "You know what, we looked at this loan and we found something"? So how long does the risk last for you guys?
I should know that, and I'm sorry I don't. With all the new RESPA regulations and Dodd-Frank and TRID and everything else.
Maybe it never ends.
Yeah, our NMLS number is on every trustee that goes out. So, you know, if a client complains and enough of them complain, I'm sure they could shut us down as originators, regardless of how much time has passed.
Okay.
And actually, you know, I don't want to mention any names, but there was an originator in Southern California who did some less than above board things and ended up getting his license pulled.
Okay.
So, I mean, it is a big deal now, way more than it used to be.
Okay. How competitive is the lending business than it was in the past?
I'm sorry. I'm having a kind of bad connection, I think.
Yeah, but that's okay. We're almost done. Is the lending business more competitive now than it used to be?
I'd say it's just as competitive as it always has been.
Okay.
You know, we have a good mix of the big banks. Like us, you have your independent brokers. They always get their piece of the pie. You know, it's been that way for most of the time that I've been in the business.
Now, with the new company that you're with, you can go out of California. Can you loan in Florida?
Yes. We actually can loan in all 50 states.
Okay. Can you loan investors on rentals, that type of thing?
Yeah.
Okay. Construction loans?
We have a construction program. I'm not an expert on it, so I usually just refer that off to someone who is. But we definitely have a good product for it.
Okay. All right. I'm trying to drum up some business for you.
I appreciate that.
What, Carrie? What number could somebody call if they wanted to talk to you directly? And that, as I mentioned when I spoke in front of your group. You're my go-to guy when I need an A-paper loan for myself, or I refer somebody. You are who I send.
That. You're awesome. My direct line is 951-228-7782.
Okay.
Hey, everybody, it's Aaron Norris with the Norris Group, and we'd love to see you out and about. Don't forget to mark your calendars for February 1st, Turmoil by Bruce Norris, and I'll be there too. We're going to be covering everything from lots and lots of timing to legislation possibly coming in 2020. We have some very special guests that we will announce probably in the middle of January as we finalize the scope of the full day event. It comes with subscription to our VIP, meaning you'll have access to over 70 hours of real estate investor education strategically focused on California. Also, don't forget, March 19th and 20th, we're doing the Florida Buying Bootcamp. If you've thought about doing some 1031 exchanging or want to know what it takes to get into another market, you might really enjoy it. Check out thenorrisgroup.com/training to learn all about our upcoming events in a local market near you. The Norris Group originates and services loans in California and Florida under California DRE License 01219911, Florida Mortgage Lender License 1577, and NMLS License 1623669. For more information on hard money lending, go to thenorrisgroup.com and click the hard money tab.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.